It's Learning to Listen with Quinn, Naomi, and Charlie.
Nice. Welcome to Learning to Listen. This is an edition of Bargain Bin, so kind of a companion. This is where we take albums out of the bargain bin and give them a spin and see if they're worthy
of their bad reputation.
Yeah, give them a nice, you know, honestly, treat them with a little bit of respect, just because I think everybody deserves a modicum, you know.
Somebody labored over that piece of shit.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I take out the anti-static brush. I run it over it once. I put the needle down. I put the headphones on.
Yeah, it turns out it's a CD.
Buckle in. Yeah, and turns out I ruined it. It
doesn't sound very good.
But hey, I got to figure out if the anti-skating on my record player was any good. So, Charlie, how is it going? DJ Charlie Scream over there with the hot drops.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah.
Hot drops is what I'm going to have after my vaccination needle on next Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah, Naomi, how are you doing over there?
I'm good.
Just hanging out with Alan Thick.
He's the better Thick. He's the Thick we should all want to be like, this Thick.
Naomi's looking thick.
Thanks.
Right on.
Hey.
I love that. Oh, yeah.
My name is Quinn. Here I am.
How you
ready
doing?
To talk about today's album, which is Robin Thicke's.
Yeah, that's
2014
right.
Album.
There it is, right there. Robin Thicke's
Paula.
Paula, that's it, right?
Holy shit. I never knew he copied that.
Yeah, I thought about that too when I saw that, and I couldn't believe it. I'm like, why an homage to Band of Gypsies? It doesn't make any sense to me.
I was like, I think I've got that record.
Yeah.
It was a different record.
But like the font is the same, right?
No.
Yeah.
Same placement. Style. Not quite. It's slightly different, but I don't think that Hendrix font is a font that
But you is it like when The Clash, like The Clash has London Calling, where they're doing an homage to Elvis's first RCA record?
I feel like it's just deliberate enough that it must be an homage.
I mean, I don't know. Here's the thing. Okay. We'll get into the album. But there's a lot of questionable choices.
Yeah.
But anyway, before we do, okay, so we're talking about Paula. I believe it or not, the seventh studio album from Robin Thicke.
Yeah.
Released in 2014, July 1st. To say it was a bomb on its release is an understatement. It did sell 24,000 copies on its first release in the U.S., which is head and shoulders above the sales elsewhere. It only sold about 530 copies in the UK, 550 in Canada, and a whopping 158 in Australia.
That's a lot.
That's a horrible thing. Like, compared to the success of the album before that, like, that just tells you something right out loud, and that people were sick of him.
You know what it tells you?
It stinks.
Well, yeah, we'll get into it in a second, but I just wanted to ask you, Charlie, how does it feel that Robin Thicke, like, you know, had one of the biggest selling singles in the last decade, and we've sold more records than
that album
of one album, but you know, we can say
that album in its play in certain places,
we've outsold Robin Thicke.
Well, I mean, it's an honor. An honor and a privilege.
So should we get into some background first before we get into the record?
I think you kind of have to, because I think a lot of this the story of this album really depends on what happened, like, almost directly, well, not directly, but like before it.
Well, a year before this, he had a huge hit single with Blurred Lines, mm-hmm. with featuring Pharrell and production from T.I. or something like that?
Pharrell and T.I. were, well, T.I. was rapping in it.
T.I. was rapping in it? Yes, that's right.
Pharrell was probably the producer.
I had them backwards. Yes, you're correct. Yeah, and we all remember Blurred Lines. Mm. We remember the video.
It was everywhere.
We remember his appearance at the VMAs with Miley Cyrus and her twerking controversy.
Twerking gate.
I remember hearing at that point the most traffic that had been on Twitter at one point up till then was that moment, was people tweeting about Miley Cyrus and Robin Thicke at the VMAs.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Robin Thicke had his biggest year in 2013 when that single came out. Up to that point, he'd had a mildly successful career, depending on what you count. I mean, obviously, he'd been putting out records, and I don't know how well any of them charted. I wasn't really aware of him, but it turns out he'd been behind the scenes as a producer and a writer.
He had done a lot of work with a lot of people. He'd actually had a very respectable songwriting and producing career for a long time, where he'd worked with a lot of people.
Yeah,
the only reason I knew about him was because he worked with Jordan Knight on his first solo album.
Okay. Right, I was going to ask you, Naomi, if you knew a bit of his history of producing and songwriting.
I was looking over the wiki, and I was actually surprised some of the mentions in there that I didn't know he had done. He's worked with a lot of people.
Well, I would say the most notable one would probably be working with Usher, especially on the album My Confessions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Which was, I mean, it must have got him a lot of royalties. That's that's a mega, mega selling record, right? Like,
yeah.
Big hit record, and that came out early 2000s. I'm not totally sure when, probably 2003,
something like that.
2005, yeah. Somewhere in that. Anyway, and so it's not like he doesn't have some pedigree. Obviously, we know him in Canada as Alan Thicke's son.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I don't
know.
Have
you heard him talk?
That's his claim to fame.
Have you heard Robin Thicke speak?
Oh, yeah.
It's Alan. It's Alan's voice.
Thicke was like charming. There's a reason he got cast in sitcoms, is like the everybody's dad, you know? But fucking Robin Thicke, I don't know if he just grew up like a privileged like kid in LA or something like that, you know, a Hollywood actor's son. But he just comes off so fucking smarmy and punchable.
I don't know what it is, because he does. I get skeevy, gross vibes from like him. Like, I don't know what, I wouldn't say I felt that way in the beginning before Blurred Lines, but I feel like after he had the success, there was something about him that was really creepy and gross.
And I think everybody feels that way. I think, okay, so obviously Blurred Lines blew up. It was a huge hit.
Yeah.
And I think we have to talk about Blurred Lines a little bit, because it's such an interesting song. I mean, not only was it one of those kind of hits out of nowhere, but, contextually speaking, I don't think it would have come out today, you know, to the same acclaim. I don't think anybody in their right mind would release a song about, you know, the blurred lines of basically consent.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it wasn't long after this song we started getting like Me Too and Time's Up and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And if you look back, I mean, I get it. It was a hooky song. Maybe people weren't paying attention to the lyrical content. It came on.
Oh, I was not paying attention to the lyrics
at all. Came on in the club, mm-hmm. Right? You know, and it's maybe you can excuse some of it as like flirty behavior or whatever, or it's got lines like, you know, it's like, I know you want me, whatever, right?
I know, but you want it.
Yeah, but it just doesn't age well. And now it's kind of, you look back on it and cringe, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah. Also, then they lost the lawsuit where they got sued by Marvin Gaye's estate for the sample from, I can't remember what the song was, but
it was Blurred Lines.
Was the original song Blurred Lines?
No.
Blurred Lines was the song that was, should have had Marvin Gaye's songwriting credit on it. And it
I know that.
Gaye's song wasn't called Blurred Lines though.
Yeah. No, what was the song? No. I can't remember right now. It's the one where he sings all in falsetto.
Let's Get It On.
No. He didn't sing that one in falsetto. Charlie, look that up for a second, please.
Let's Get It On.
Not Let's Get It On. Look up the Marvin Gaye song that was sampled for Blurred Lines.
Yeah, that's definitely not falsetto, the way.
Let's Get It On.
But, anyway, that song kind of blew up. But I think because suddenly he was a person in the public eye, and we're talking, you know, the internet age here, social media, where now you're on Instagram, you're on Twitter, your whole life is on there. People are seeing, like, the, for whatever reason, the deposition from the, you know, the legal proceedings of the sample, whatever lawsuit. He came off really smarmy.
The song was Got to Give It Up.
Got to Give Up. Yeah. I don't know the words because it's just
that sounds like it might be the same subject matter.
Gotta give it up.
Anyway, so I think there was a bit of a backlash on a bunch of fronts with him. I think people just, once they got a whiff of his personality, they were just turned the fuck off. Mm-hmm. And he was living large. He, you know, even in those depositions, you know, he would say like, man, fuck, like, I'll just say whatever I need to say to sell records. People are, do you consider yourself an honest person? He's like, no.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, look, I was drunk and high pretty much every time I gave an interview, that sort of thing. Like, I don't know. I don't think he won a lot of favor with the public, you know. And then on top of that, he was caught very publicly cheating on his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And any graciousness he had with the public, I think he lost.
Mm-hmm.
It was fodder for the tabloids at the time. It was all over Twitter. I think very famously, I thought that I heard that he actually cheated on his wife with one of the models in Blurred Lines.
That's what I thought I heard too.
Yeah, that could just be rumor. I'm not totally sure, but there is a very famous photo of him grabbing a woman's ass.
Yeah,
at the VMAs. Like somebody just was like, oh, can I take a picture with you? And he, for whatever reason, not realizing there was a giant mirrored wall behind him, is very clearly got his hand very firmly on this woman's ass. And of course that went out to Twitter, and you know, that just stuff like that. Like it's easy to see why there was a public backlash, because just like anything that becomes very popular too, people are looking for reasons to hate it and tear it down, right?
Mm.
So he gave people reasons, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's his aunt? So his wife, obviously, him and him separate. And what is his answer to that separation? And I'm sure probably doing a little bit of damage control of his public reputation. The album Paula.
There it is.
So it's basically a concept record. The entire project is designed in a way to, I guess, win back the favor of his estranged wife, Paula.
This will work for sure.
And yeah, and like we said before, it came out to like critical derision. Like, mm-hmm. People hated it. And so before we get into our hot takes, I just want to ask you guys now, do you think that it's just because it's a bad album, whether or not you think it is a bad album, or do you think some of it is just public backlash, no matter what he did next, even if he got back together with T.I. and Pharrell and, you know, they were like, all right, let's make sure we clear the sample and just put out another banger, that album would have tanked too.
I just wanted to add that him and his wife had been together for over 20 years. Like, she stood by him while he was coming up and everything, and that's the thing she got. So, like,
I'm sure she was embarrassed, right? Like,
yeah. What I was trying to figure out with this album that I thought was the biggest turnoff when I was listening to it and thinking about it was just like, is he trying to make people feel sorry for him? For what he's done? Like, that's the kind of feeling, like, I feel like you really have to pay attention to the lyrics in this album more so than anything, because the melodies just aren't really there.
Yeah, but the lyrics aren't there either.
I was going to say, but then you're paying attention to the lyrics, and that's what you're going to have.
And the lyrics are shallow. Mm-hmm. See, here's the thing, is if you want to make an album to say you're sorry, then say you're sorry. I don't think
apologize anywhere in that?
No. I read all the lyrics today. By the way, they took me like less time than it takes me to read my fucking 3-month-year-old like a book. Because you can skip most of the choruses. They're all just very, very redundant and repetitive. Like the lead single on this, Get Her Back. I gotta get her back, get her back, get her back, get her back.
Oh, that song's annoying.
Get her back, get her back, get her back. The whole album is like that. Look, yeah. Charlie, I don't know. I was trying to find out if we're like, was it backlash? Like, no matter what he did,
do you think
people would have still been like,
I think it's a perfect storm of both of those things. A, his public persona. People are like, what the fuck's up with this guy? And B, he just had a super mega hit with Blurred Lines. So he's going to have to follow that up hard, right? Mm-hmm. And from what I heard, there ain't nothing like that on this album. So I think it's just like those two things mashed up together, right? So it's a perfect storm of column A and B.
Okay, fair enough.
I think this is a no-win scenario.
Okay, if you had to like give a hot take, just sum it up, if we're putting a tweet out there that's just like your general impression of the record, what would it be?
I'll do you what might even be one better. I'll tell you what my wife said, because I had it on the speakers today in the living room to listen to it. And she walked in and she says, this album sucks hard and it sounds like a shitty Broadway musical. It sounds like, and by the way, she loves good Broadway musicals. And she says, it's like Glee. It's like a shitty episode of Glee. Like, not, and she likes Glee also. So
I can see some of that on a few of the tracks. Yeah. Naomi, if you had to sum up your initial impression in a hot take, like a Twitter 220, what would you say?
It just seems like it's a pandering mess. Like, like, I don't know. The first few songs on the album really annoyed me. Once we got to like the second half, I wasn't as annoyed. There was a couple songs on there I actually really liked. So, but it's just the whole message of the album. It's so self-indulgent to me. I don't see it as being in any way respectful to his ex. It's more like everyone look at me and feel sorry for me. And it's a big turnoff.
Yeah. So I would say that too. I would say that my impression of this at the end was not that he was actually genuinely sorry for anything he did. He wasn't really trying to get his wife back. He was just trying to make it seem like he's trying to get his wife back.
I think he wanted people to think that he was turning a leaf, trying to be a better man.
Yeah. I think it was
because of everything else that made him look like a fucking skis ball. But I think that it was his way of making the public think that he was trying to reform when he was still a shithead.
Yeah, you know? I think it's transparently manipulative. And when things are transparently manipulative like that, they're cringy. It's just cringe, cringe, cringe. It's cringe.
It just wasn't believable. I couldn't believe he was
genuine. And here's the thing about it is, you know, he'd worked on like My Confession with Usher, which is an album that's from a similar place, right? Like where Usher had gone through a very public like breakup and very dramatic in the tabloids. And he ended up putting out like one of the, you know, probably best R&B albums of the era. But it also has bangers on it, right? Like it's got personal lyrics on it. They're a lot deeper. I heard somebody also compare it to 444. 444, or however you put it, the Jay-Z album, or Lemonade, you know, obviously, which is about Jay-Z and Beyonce's relationship, both of them putting out very personal records about, you know, the rough spot in their relationship that was very public for a while.
When they do it, we think they're brave, but when Robin Thicke does it, it doesn't have the same effect.
Okay, but there's a couple of reasons. Oh, yeah, go ahead, Charlie.
From what I think is, like, if it's an apology album of sorts, it doesn't come off as, like, an honest I'm sorry. Obviously it comes off like more like I'm sorry you're so stupid, or I'm sorry I got caught, you know. It's like,
I'm sorry
you're so stupid, you know, that kind of thing. As opposed
it does to, when you do read the lyrics, a lot of them put the onus on her, right? Like he's like, look here, I made a whole album, so
obviously you already know I'm a dumb idiot, so like what's your problem, you know?
Yeah, it's like where he tries to manipulate the narrative to where he's somehow kind of the victim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're like, no,
that's
dude.
What I mean. He wants people to feel sorry for him.
Like, one of the first things Jay-Z says in 444 is, I apologize. He says the words, I apologize. Mm-hmm. And here's the other thing is, you know what Jay-Z and Beyonce and Usher, even back then, have over somebody like Robin Thicke?
What's that?
That they're considered stars and like legends, not only in their genre, but like they have goodwill going back decades.
Right.
I mean, Usher going back to the 90s at that point, it might have been still fairly early in his career, but like, it's not like he came out of nowhere. He had a fan base that was willing to forgive him. Mm-hmm. Or even if they ever were like, ooh, you've been a bad boy. Like, Jay-Z, I mean, yeah, he's a fucking superstar. Obviously, in Beyonce's case, she could hold her head up and be like, I was the one victimized here, I guess, right? But like, either way, I'm just saying there's a lot of goodwill that they built up that even if they screw up, as long as they know that they did screw up and they genuinely say sorry, people are like, you cad, like, you wrote a banger about it. Good for you. You know what I mean? People don't have that goodwill with Robin Thicke.
Wait, they, you mean twerking at the Video Awards doesn't get you a bucket load of goodwill?
wearing a Beetlejuice suit?
Come on, if that's not goodwill, I don't know what is.
I didn't hold that against him. I thought that was actually probably a pretty decent.
I don't hate that that happened.
But I'm just saying, like, yeah, people just didn't have the goodwill for Robin Thicke. So I feel like, yeah, overall, this album just comes out as this weird piece of manipulation to try and repaint the picture with, like, you know, a selfish brush.
Mm.
Right? And it didn't work. They never got back together. He didn't get her back, as far as I know.
No, in fact, he found his next wife and started being pretty much engaged within the same year.
You're kidding. 2014?
Yeah.
See, that's what I mean.
Yeah. I don't know if he's married to this woman. They might just be common law. They have 3 kids together already.
So, yeah, there you go. So he didn't mean it, because somebody who is really pining and really publicly sorry probably would have waited a little bit longer. I mean, would have at least an album cycle, you know?
at least, you know, find your new muse or whatever on the next album and then really.
Like, it's not like she died in a tragic accident or something, you know? Like, he screwed up, and then then he was out there touring and, like, telling audiences, like, all right, y'all, come on, help me get her back. Help me get it back now.
Not only that, but while he's doing that, he's also projecting her picture on as the backdrop for these concerts.
He called the album Paula.
Yeah, so that's like...
How manipulative is that? That's creepy.
And it's like laying a guilt trip on her.
Yeah.
It's such a guilt trip on her. It's making her... Yeah, like, it's not fair to her to have that kind of pressure put on her publicly.
Yeah, like, exactly.
He's the one who fucks up, and she's the one who has to... endure all the fucking public attention from it. It's not fair at all,
which makes me wonder maybe it's because it was before the album came back. Maybe she didn't know the name of the album, maybe she didn't know the content of the tracks, but he did get her to come into the studio to give one line.
Yeah,
I'm moving to New York.
Yeah. Are you serious? Yeah,
the line, you know, that starts off the best song on the album.
Yeah, okay, let's get into the actual content. The music. I was going to say this in my hot takes too, though, is I think so he might have been aiming for a My Confessions, but he just ended up doing like a piss poor Michael Bublé impression.
Oh, that song? Was that the one?
No, that one is him doing a piss poor.
That was the James Brown
/ Stevie Wonder impression.
That was the song Time of Your Life.
No, New York.
Living in New York City.
Living in New York City. Is definitely kind of like an 80s James Brown, like Living in America,
totally.
Mixed with a little bit of 70s Stevie Wonder.
Yeah.
You know?
Nerdy Kitten says he sounds like a narcissist, and I agree. The manipulation, playing the victim, making it all about them, she says. She's right.
Boom. Oh, sweet.
That is the definition of narcissism.
Shout out to the Peanut Gallery, please. Yeah, put your input in while we're talking. Did anybody else think this whole album sounded way underproduced?
You know what it sounded like to me? It sounded like Muzak. If I go into an elevator in maybe some clothing store or some shit, and I'm going to the second floor because I need a new cardigan sweater, this is playing in some of the lighter tracks, you know?
Well, yeah, because you got the bossa nova guitar.
Yeah.
So on the songs where he's not trying to sound like Michael Bublé, which is probably those shitty musical Glee, he's doing, which is apparently a classic Robin Thicke, but I never listened to Robin Thicke, so I didn't know. But apparently from what I've heard is like his sound is bossa nova guitar and whispery boy band vocals.
Yeah.
Right? But he's apparently known best for his falsetto, which is weird because he only uses it a few times on this album for like backup vocals and a couple of like, you know,
yeah,
because it's so hard to shine like a diamond when you're so hurt.
Is that what it is?
It wasn't technique. It was just pain.
Yeah, it was pain of him going like knocking on the piano.
I guess I'm going to have to find someone else to sleep with now.
But I got the impression that like I think a lot of this was originally like demo versions of these songs.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
That he threw together?
Yeah, there's not a song on here that's really all that well produced. I mean, and I don't mean, like, that can work, right? Like, very raw arrangements, very sparse arrangements can work. But it's like, it's almost like we're listening to, like, an unplugged album mm-hmm. without the original songs to back them up and contrast them to. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, when you hear
that, songs feel so empty.
Yeah, it's like when you hear an Alice in Chains unplugged, one of the reasons it works is because it's contrasting what you have in your mind from, like, hearing the original version with, like, layered guitars and big drums. And then, you know, it's interesting. In this case, though, it's just, yeah, it's just hollow. The sound is so hollow. Mm. It's so weirdly empty. I'm listening in headphones today, and I'm just like, man, could you just, I don't know, beef this up somehow? Like, there's, it's just, every song is so lacking something.
Right.
You know, it's not done in an interesting way. It's almost like microphone in the room. I'm going to pour my heart out over this piano, but he's phoning it in. So it's not like you're hearing somebody alone in a room that's just really expressing the pain of their heart. It's somebody who's just like, you know, trying to calculate, like, ooh, if I sing a song about how she dances on her tippy toes.
Oh, God, that was like the worst. That was the worst song on the album.
I hated that song.
That's like a Payless Shoes commercial waiting to happen.
And it's another song where he just, the hook is just the repeated word over again. Tippy-toes, tippy-toes, tippy-toes.
That was actually the point when Kaylee walked in the room and said, this is some bullshit right here.
She walked into the worst song on the album.
No, right? She had heard it, like, it was loud enough that she heard it all throughout the house. But that's when she was like, I can't not say anything at this
point. It reminded me of when there was, like, 50s nostalgia on, like, 80s and 90s sitcoms where, like, a chubby checker would, like, show up on Full House and then just, like, half-assed sing along to the twist or something,
and then Jesse would be in his band.
Yeah, exactly. And then,
yeah, Jesse was always in every musical guest
and band. Then Dave Coulier would be doing the twist with, like, you know, Michelle or something in the corner. That's what it reminded me of. It was just so phoned in, man.
Yep.
Anyway, that's like, yeah, I don't even like sometimes I can get track to track on these records. You know, I'm like, I'll real break them down. I got so bored listening to this. I don't think I've ever been more bored listening to, like, we've listened to some garbage records. And I don't know if this is technically the worst album we've listened to, but at least, like, all the other ones so far have at some point been interesting enough for me to go, like, even a what the fuck moment. This didn't even have what the fuck moments as far as just, like, I don't know, like
okay. Like, how about this? Would you rather listen to this album or Macho Man's Be a Man?
Oh, Macho Man all day. And yeah. I don't like that record. Naomi, what were you saying?
I thought you guys might. I was wondering what your impressions were of that song, Black Tar Cloud. I thought that one might be one that you guys might like. It's kind of like got a bluesy rock undertone to it a little bit.
Well, I think by that point in the record, because Black Tar Cloud comes around halfway point, right?
Yeah.
Like track 8, is that I stopped making notes about individual songs and I just wrote down, I'm not even kidding you, I just wrote down, it's just so half-assed.
It really is.
And then my next note after that is,
I feel like it would have taken him like 20 minutes to write each song, if that.
Okay, because the last song I made a note about is literally Love Can Grow Back. And that's where I made the note about how, like, he's, you know, trying to do a Michael Bublé for some reason.
Right.
And I don't know what the thought process, like, it's, I like, look, I appreciate people who try different things and you know, aren't just so one note on any album. I like people that are diverse, but it's like, you know, there's gotta be some consistency. Like, he goes weird, whispery boy band vocals, and then he does Michael Bublé, you know, but then he does, like, his this limp ass James Brown / Stevie Wonder thing too. It's like, pick a lane. But yeah, literally, that was the last one I made any notes about songs. And right after that is Just So Half-Assed. And my next note after Just So Half-Assed is I'm So Bored.
I liked one song.
Which one?
I did two.
The one called Too Little Too Late.
Too Little Too Late?
It's also the only upbeat track on the album.
No, it's not.
Tippy Toes is very upbeat.
Tippy Whatever. Toes is upbeat, but... And for me, my pick of best, let's go around and do best picks on the album. If you were forced to listen to one song on this album, Living in New York City, that's the one for me. Because it's a James Brown ripoff for sure, but at least it's a James Brown ripoff.
Mm-hmm. It's a pastiche, but here's the problem. It's missing something. Like, the band isn't tight on that. If you're going to do James Brown, you need tight.
Here's a question about that. Right in the beginning, and I think maybe a couple times throughout, he says Black Daddy. Now,
what's that all about?
Who is Black Daddy? Do you figure that's him giving his respects to James Brown? Or is that, do you think, me putting too much thought into this?
It's got to be somebody on the track, right? Because when he says it, somebody responds by going, yeah.
Yeah. Black Daddy. Yeah.
Is it William Taylor, Ronnie Baru, Limar Gluten? That's the thing, man. There are four songwriters on that song.
Who? Limar Gluten?
Limar Gullery? I don't know how to... Maybe it's Gier? It's got two L's in the middle.
The name, I don't...
So it's like Gil-Larry. Gullery. Limar Gullery.
Galerius.
That's hilarious.
I don't know. But I'm like, you needed four people to write Living in New York City.
Which actually brings me to another thing I was thinking about this record. And then I saw a stat, which was like, holy shit. I was like, okay, so this does not seem like, you know, like, where did he get these lyrics from? Who wrote this shit, right? Did he write this shit? Is he any good? But then I saw that he's written over 102 songs for himself alone, and that doesn't include the works he wrote for Usher. Of course, of those 102 songs, like 97 of them include, or, you know, one or all of Love, his baby, or his girl. So, like, you know, he's a really diverse writer, but he has actually written a hell of a lot of songs.
So, okay, that leads me to think that, yes, this was not just a rush job, but it was originally, like, there was a point where they were in the studio. He's sitting at a piano. Maybe he's got a couple other people working on some tunes with him, and, like, you know, like, let's get whoever in here and work out this part.
Yeah, get Black Daddy in here.
And they've got the microphone's hot, an engineer in the booth recording it down, and they're trying to get some demos down. And Robin goes in there and he listens back. He looks at a calendar and says, fuck, you know what? Put it out.
Just go with it.
This is the album. This is the album.
It's the opposite of Chinese Democracy.
Yeah. Because, like, it's weird, right? Like, how do you go from Blurred Lines? Not just, like, just think of, I don't know about the whole album. I haven't listened to the whole album, but I know the song well. I mean, who hasn't heard that song 100 million fucking times? And think about the production on Blurred Lines. Just that song. And compare it to the production to any of the songs, this whole album. How do you go from Blurred Lines, a well-produced song, right, to him knocking on a piano in the studio and leaving that in? Like, it's terrible. Like, I mean, it could work, right?
It could.
I mean, there's classic albums that are very raw, like Microphone in the Room.
Sure.
There's singers and songwriters that I love, like their live albums. Or, God, just look at, like, a fucking Redheaded Stranger, Willie Nelson, right?
Yeah.
That's a very raw strip back. I mean, it's also the production of the 70s. They're not doing it digital or whatever. But, like, you know, people heard that album. The executives at the label heard that album and were like, okay, great demos, but when are you going to make the real record?
Right.
And it's like, this is the record. But that was like, that was a vision. That was a piece of art. That's genius. This just doesn't have it. It just doesn't have it. And that just leads me to think that, like, he just rushed it out there because he was just trying to do damage control.
Yeah. Maybe it's also, it could have been like, you just had this huge giant hit. How are you going to top that, right? What are you going to do next? Just get anything out. Just get something out and get it that next bump over with, and then you can go back to maybe doing good stuff.
Maybe. Maybe it was the management, because it wasn't at the end of an album cycle. It was less than a year later. So right. I feel like it was really pushed to get out there.
Strike while the iron's hot. Get something out there. And then
normally your traditional album cycle is roughly a year and a half to 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea is that normally you have your album, hopefully a single or two hit. You tour and promote that album for at least a year. You go back in the studio. You work on a record for a few months, and you do it all over again, right?
Mm.
So to get a record out that fast, like when did it exactly come out? It came out in July.
I think it was 2014.
Right? Yeah, June. It was June 2014. And when did Blurred Lines come out?
I don't know.
Blurred Lines is eternal. It's always been out.
March.
Oh, right.
So March 2013 to June, it's a little over a year, but that's still a real, real quick. I mean, unless you're really prolific. But I mean, I guess he's put the content out before. But like you said, it's all either contains the word baby or girl.
Baby, girl, or love all together.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I'm more interested in listening to the musical content than the lyrical content. So I didn't really.
Okay. Yeah. Let's talk about that.
I mean, and when you said it's thin, it is thin. Like it's very basic. Production, like I don't know, maybe he wanted to keep it stripped down, but like the songs weren't good enough on their own to be stripped down. They needed production value because they weren't strongly written songs,
right? Exactly.
The songs that are good songs are the ones that you can pull out an acoustic guitar and just play it and sing it,
right?
But none of these songs were that.
Yeah, if you were sitting around a campfire and somebody was like, hey, play that Robin Thicke tune. Like, I don't even think Blurred Lines would work, to be honest. But in a club where you've got, you know, fat bass lines and good drums and, you know, like, yeah. Like, yeah, that works. Oh,
we got a comment from the Peanut Gallery. Cold shower. Mm-hmm. Holy fuck, has it been that long since we were introduced to Miley's chicken thighs?
Yeah, 2013, guys. Think about how much the world has changed since Miley fucking went all like. Was that what point in Miley's career was that? Like, how long after Hannah Montana was she twerking on the VMAs?
It was a while after already, right? She'd put out.
Oh, yeah.
She'd put out a bunch of stuff.
She already put out
in the middle of her. I'm gonna stick my tongue out everywhere, and I'm a grown up woman now phase. So I'm gonna do. I want.
Party in the USA, Miley, right?
It was after that. Yeah, We Won't Stop and songs like that. She'd cut her hair. She was being super overtly sexual. She's trying to like that was that phase.
Every like Disney, you know, groomed pop star goes through it, right?
Mm-hmm. The rebellion phase. It's just natural.
Yeah. Speaking of
you get mad at your parents and then you rebel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, except Miley Cyrus's father is Billy Ray Cyrus. I don't know if he's like, do you think he was like a helicopter parent, you know, or a dance mom? I'm sure like he had a hand in helping get her career going, right? Like he used to show up episodes of Hannah Montana.
It's probably how she got cast on the Disney show, right? Just because of her dad. Yeah. But his career was always I'm not a hugely versed person in the world of country music. But
neither is Billy Ray Cyrus. So
I would say that he was a flash in the pan as his career took off in the early 90s. Because I don't like he had what was the album called? Some Gave All?
Some Gave All with a big hit, Achy Breaky Heart.
Yeah, but he had a couple hits, radio hits off that album.
Of more minor hits after that, based just on the...
Achy Breaky Heart was crossover. It was on top 40.
Well, one of the things is that which, I mean, in hindsight, probably was not a great thing, was it set a precedent for the kind of fans it brought over to country radio.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And... between, you know, guys like Billy Ray Cyrus and Garth Brooks and, you know, even Shania Twain to some extent, it became more about marketing to like that pop sensibility over, you know, what had been up to that point, country radio had been more about this like neo-traditionalist movement. And yeah, Achy Breaky Heart was like one of the fucking death and like nails in that coffin.
Nail in the coffin.
Boom. All right. Let's put that to bed. And then it was like, she thinks my tractor sexy after that. So, and look where we are now. Like,
there's
a few
artists that had their hand in that.
Oh, yeah. He's one. And I'm just saying he's one of them. So, but he's also been a coattails kind of guy, too, right? Like, he jumps on every trend. I mean, man, as soon as he saw
Lil Nas X
come in, he was like, oh boy, I'm going to call this guy right away before anybody else in the record industry gets to him, you know? Like, hey, you want to go from bedroom rapper to international pop star? I got you.
Having him for a father, I don't know how she got any fucking cred. Like, I don't know. She somehow managed to get herself
she had to wear a wig
very...
and pretend she was somebody else.
She managed to get herself a decent career considering yeah, but also, that for a dad.
And in my opinion, I mean, I think she's great. So that's
no,
why
she,
you know, just gotta get the foot in the door and then kick it open herself, right?
I think she's got talent for sure.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't think all her records are amazing, but like they are what they are.
No, I don't think he was saying that he's saying she thinks my tractor's sexy, but he encouraged that kind of song to be released after that, right?
No. Yeah, no.
Kenny Chesney did that song.
Kenny, yes.
Right, okay.
So the path of the dark side started with Billy Ray Cyrus, you know, to where we get the sexy tractors and honky tonk badonka donks.
Achy breaky heart leads to the dark side.
Yes, exactly.
the start of bro country.
It was this one of the seeds, you know. I would say that it goes back even further, to be honest, but that's a whole other episode. This
yeah,
one
we've totally derailed.
Yeah, you know why? Because this album
pleasantly so
is there's just so little to say about this record, really. You know,
yeah,
like
true,
because it's just not. It's interesting on one level. It's interesting on what he was attempting to do.
Yeah. Right.
But the product itself is so phoned in, half-assed, hollow, empty, that you're just like, what do you even say about it? You're like, yeah, it's clear that like you were trying to capitalize on the moment and, you know, you tried to maybe turn in your 444 or your My Confessions. But really, we all saw through it. It was a manipulative piece of trash. That, like we were talking about earlier, put all the onus on the woman, in this case, Paula, and to, like, you know, relieve yourself of guilt. And we didn't fall for it. Nobody yeah. fell for it. But here's the thing is, I never, ever, 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 until we decided to do this, listened to this album. Had you guys?
No. I've never. No, I've, the never. Only song of his I've ever heard would have been Blurred Lines, period.
I feel like I heard a few of his songs off that album with Blurred Lines, but that's it.
Oh, maybe.
And I actually wasn't aware of anything he had been involved in writing before that, except that Jordan Knight album. That's it.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, unless you're the kind of person who's like, oh, I'm going to get into the liner notes of this Usher record, you probably had never really seen his name before, right?
No, I had no idea he was involved in that Usher album, and I like that album.
Which is interesting. So his career up to that point had been kind of more or less behind the scenes, even though he had some records out there. I think that he was just putting them out in between working with bigger artists, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
And this was his time to shine, and he blew it. You know, like he just blew it.
He very quick. He could have had a really good career, but he had super bad image problems right from the get go.
So I'm guessing that here's the problem: is that like the crowd that he was pandering to that wasn't buying it are like, you know, they're like the Jimmy Kimmel Live and they're like the morning whatever talk show types at mm-hmm. this point, which is nothing but like, you know, women, right? And like
I mean, I don't know, man. I used to like to watch me some Regis.
Yeah, that's well. I don't even know if he was showing up on Regis, but he's showing up on
Regis.
But he's showing up on stuff like "Good Morning America." So the only people who would have heard these songs are that fan base that would have been like, "Boo!" That he mistreated. Like the fact that he had a high school sweetheart that he'd been with for so long, you know, and they have the story like, "Oh, I won her over by singing Stevie Wonder to her on the dance floor." By the way, it turns out the song was "Jungle Fever."
I love Jungle Fever.
That's kind that of song. I don't. Well, if you got to pick the worst,
that's a Stevie Wonder song. Yeah.
Yeah. If you have to pick the worst Stevie Wonder song, I'm pretty sure it's Jungle Fever.
Well, here's the thing: you've got somebody who's like Jon Bon Jovi, who married his high school sweetheart, and they're still together. And the women who watch the Today Show are all like, "Oh, we love him so much."
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It wins so
much
favor.
And Robin Dick is just not that guy.
But if he put this record out and he was just like, if this next record, if that had never happened, if he wasn't grabbing asses, if he wasn't twerking, if he wasn't getting sued and going like, "I just do blow and I don't care what I say," if that had never seen the light of day, and he was like, so I just, you know, now that I got this time to shine, I got my moment of spotlight, I wanted to get this record out, you know, because through it all, the one person who's been there, and that's my wife, and so I dedicated a whole record to her. And it wasn't like, get it back, or tippy toes. It was like, you know, but it was some of the songs like Forever Love, like the last song on the record.
That was, you know, one of the few that actually seemed a little bit sincere. It was just him and
I like
the
piano. That song.
Yeah, and that's why I picked it out. Oh, because earlier when you asked what would be your song, I'd be like, honestly, man, I got to the end of the album and I was like, oh, this song actually sounds decent.
Why you didn't do this for the whole rest of the album?
This should have been the whole album. So, but like, okay, just, I know it's hard, it's hypothetical, but like, just imagine that the scenario is different, that it's like off of, you know, Blurred Lines, where he's like, yeah, look, I know, you know, that song, it's a club hit, baby. You know.
You should have done it like the boy bands, you, baby. I know I baby. Hurt you.
Yeah, exactly.
Just give me one more chance to show that I love you.
But if it was Forever Love, just imagine that same audience, that same Today Show, Jimmy Kimmel Live audience would have just been like swooning over him, right?
Yeah.
You know, they might have, he's a little bit of a bad boy, but really, he loves his wife so much.
Whoever was doing his PR fucked up bad.
No, well, he fucked up so bad.
Yeah, I think
they could not fix that mess.
You can only polish a turd so much, right?
Okay, you're right. You're right. There is no polishing that.
At some point, you're just like, I don't know. Let him do it. I don't care. Whatever. I'll go get another job.
But it's such a weird story because he barely got off the ground and he tanked. Like, there was no glory really there for him at all in his career. Like, it just, I don't know. It just,
well, isn't he now a,
here's what he's doing now. He's a judge on The Masked Singer.
Oh, there you go. He's made
Tuesday nights. We have a thing on Zoom where we all watch The Masked Singer together.
Some of you do. You do.
And I have friends with me.
No. I know. But like,
shout out to Dirty Kitten. Shout out to Cold Shower.
Yeah, Charlie. I'm, she's just got saying, friends. Okay.
Quinn and myself. No, not really.
Okay.
I'm not really. No, I can't. I can't stand.
Yeah,
by
you guys
that
are one. Too good for Masked Singer.
I can't stand by that one.
Look, I tuned in for half an episode once. Okay.
But he looks, okay. Yes, you did, Quinn. Yes, you did. Okay. So it's just, he, even the way he dresses on the show is so skeezy. Like, even he got Doug. Who's that guy? Somebody fact checking Charity. Who's that guy? Joel or something, who was a co-host. He was on Community. That actor.
Okay. This was on Community. Oh, are you talking about?
Wait, McHale.
Oh, Joel McHale.
I know the answer.
Okay, but Joel McHale everywhere. Is self-aware of how smarmy he is, and like, that's kind of like the roles he gets played, is that he gets played like this cocky.
That's not what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
So he literally said to Robin Thicke, he's like, something about how you, oh, look how you dressed up as like a 70s club owner tonight. Like, he dresses like that all the time.
Well, I was going to say, because Joel McHale is, his character often in a lot of stuff he does is the cocky, like, you know,
I'm not a
self-obsessed
big
person. But the reason it works is because he's actually self-aware enough to realize that's the image he's projecting. So it's funny.
He's
right?
Doing it on,
like,
purpose.
Yeah, yeah. That's why he works so well, like, in Community and shows like,
yeah,
that.
He knows,
like,
what he's
even
doing.
Even when he was
soup.
The host of The Soup, right?
Oh, yeah,
you know,
The Soup.
Like, yeah. Like, yeah, he's sarcastic and full of himself. But there's, it's funny because, you know, it's a little tongue-in-cheek, right?
So I would say that I think that Robin Thicke is like a physically attractive person, but there's something about looking at him that just grosses me out. Like,
yeah,
he does nothing for me. He makes me dry like the desert. Like,
his personality is gross.
Not good.
Is it just, you just hear it like a little clap in your pants go.
It's like a little poof.
It just puffs out a little sand.
The cobwebs.
Do you guys remember when, like, sometimes here in Alberta, when we have really, really dry summers, there's those weird little mushroom fungi spore things that, like, will pop up in the middle of, like, the lawn or whatever?
What are those? Sure.
Yeah, I don't know. But you know when you were a kid and if you would squeeze them because they, like, push out dust?
Yeah.
I'm imagining, sorry, just, you know, I'm can't help myself, but I'm right now imagining your vagina just like one of those things. Just
I don't know that you should inhale that dust.
Well, I was always told not to touch those things.
Yeah, because
it's full of spores that'll get in your eyes.
I was also
something.
Told not to touch this thing either. So
yeah, because they were like, it'll turn into dust.
It's bats. What do you mean bats? It's bats. Oh, bats in my belfry. Bats in my cave.
Okay. Well, I wanted to get to this question, but I'm pretty sure I know the answer. But I was going to say, okay, now. Because you are, you know, the heterosexual woman in our group, you've been in heteronormative relationships, you know, with their ups and downs and all that. Now, say you were, I don't know, like you were Paula Patton.
Okay.
Would this get you back?
Serious answer, though.
I think too much damage was done there. Like, honestly, I think she was, I think it was probably, if I were her, I'd be embarrassed.
Extremely, because not only did you,
I would feel like I can't go out anymore or do things with people because people would always be asking me about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I think that was the wrong move to actually show that he cared. I don't think that's how you win your woman back. No.
Well, okay. Do you think
you do it with your actions and you change or whatever. You know what? People don't change. People don't change. And you can't expect someone to change for a relationship either. So, but there must have been somebody there that she fell in love with who, in the first place, why couldn't he be that guy?
The guy singing, I get jungle fever. She's get jungle fever. He's get jungle fever.
That's okay. Love. No, like he could have like tried to be the man who he was. Because I feel maybe he changed to have an image because he got some fame, and that probably is what really fucked him up.
Well,
he probably missed the guy he was, but this is just me projecting. I don't really know what happened.
From what I read today in all of the research that I did, which was reading a couple of articles on my phone while I was listening to the shitty album, was that his, I think, 7 albums that he had before Blurred Lines, which is a lot of albums, we're all basically based around, I love my wife. My wife is my everything. Paula is everything. All of it, right?
Okay.
And then Blurred Lines happens, and then he's playing grab ass everywhere, you know, right? So definitely,
yeah,
I think that was it. Like the fame went boom to his head, and he's like, I can do whatever I want now, you know, and he just used it as an excuse, and she got out of there. So
yeah.
Boom. And perfect. That's the whole story.
She
now is at the point where if that was creepy enough, I wouldn't be surprised if there was like, maybe they, I can't remember if they had kids or not, but I mean,
they had one child.
At some point, that's like almost restraining order. Like, stay away from me. You can't come around here. Stop calling me. You know, stop putting up my picture at your damn concerts. Take my name off your damn t-shirts. You know?
I'll say one line on your album.
That's right. I will say one line on your album if you stop calling me.
That's odd to me because you know how I said I'd be embarrassed? Well, she knew it was coming out because she fucking sang. She said something on it.
But
that makes me wonder, why did she do that?
Well, you don't know at that point. Like he could have got her into the studio to do that. Maybe they were having a good time, like a good point in their over relationship. And then he was like, let's get you in the thing. She didn't necessarily know the width of what the whole album was going to be.
That might have been recorded a long time ago for something else.
But I think it was specifically recorded for this album, but that maybe she didn't exactly know what the end
product was. We should call her.
Call her up.
Call her up. Paula Patton. What is Paula Patton doing these days?
I don't even know who she was in the first place.
She was an actress, but I don't know what she was in. Fact checking charity.
I think she was in the World Warcraft movie.
Oh, that was a movie.
Yeah, that happened. It was all CG, so I don't think you'd recognize her.
No, she was Orc number 3.
Yeah, exactly. She was the orc who was like...
She was Jernai number 3.
Quit bothering me or something.
Yeah.
I haven't played World of Warcraft.
Quit poking me.
I haven't played World of Warcraft before it was World of Warcraft.
We're gonna find out very shortly what she's been in. So
I think I stopped playing Warcraft around like Warcraft 2 or 3 or something like that.
Oh man, I play some of the newer Warcraft. It was pretty fun until I realized that I was doing my Warcraft job more than I was doing my real life job.
So yeah, I got enough of that in EverQuest, and then I was like, I don't want to have to ever play a game where I have to grind ever again.
Oh, I like grinding in a game. Oh, yeah, that's fun.
She was in Traffic, Ghost Protocol, Precious, Deja Vu, Warcraft, Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol. That's the one, Ghost Protocol.
Oh, yeah.
My cat.
So she's got a career. She must be doing some TV and stuff too.
Those are movies I've heard of.
Runner. That's a TV movie.
I've seen most of those movies.
Baggage Claim, Two Guns, a show called Single Ladies on TV, Law and Order Special Victims Unit.
Oh, well, yeah. Everybody eventually does Law and Order.
I've been on SVU.
Special. And Hitch. She was in Hitch.
It's like basically if you're an actor and you're ever in New York while you're there, they're like, by the way, you got to walk on part.
You
got to
get in this shot. Yeah. Getting this shot.
There was a hot minute where Criminal Minds was like that, maybe around third, fourth season, but it's kind of fallen off since then too. Now you can't. Now you're really slumming it if you're on Criminal Minds.
Was that the one with Ice-T?
Nope. That is Law and Order SVU, isn't it?
I don't know.
I don't know. There's so many things.
Once upon a time, I used to watch it on A&E. Now I don't.
He was in that other one with the other guy.
Ice-T is on SVU. That's what.
Yes. Yes, I knew it.
We've been
Well, okay, guys.
The better thick. Digress.
Yeah.
This is the better thick.
The better.
I mean, Papa, do you think thick? You think Thick was his Papa real thick name, or you think that was a stage name? Do you think it started with his porno career?
I'll find out.
Do the digging. Do the work.
I mean, come on. Like, Throbbing.
His real name is Alan Willis Jeffrey.
Knew it.
Oh, stage name.
Knew it came from his secret porno.
I like
career.
How he adds the E at the end just to make it like
make it
non-porno.
Look legit.
I mean, okay, Throbbing Thick would be a good porno name, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That should have already been done, you think.
Or that could be the porno parody.
Thick is how we like it. Cold step shower. Step.
Of blurred lines, of chopped lines of cocaine, which is, you know, what that song's really about, right?
Yeah.
Well, we did it. We listened to Paula. We talked all about it. Guys, does it deserve to be in the bargain bin?
Yes.
Yeah, 100%, right?
It stinks.
Yeah, it's atrocious. A bad record. It like there's moments on it that you're like, this could be a better record, but I think knowing the history of it, just Robin Thicke's personality, it's just
no good.
Okay, cold shower.
even if it would have been good, I think it was still set up to fail from the get-go.
Well, that's why I asked
it.
And
it wasn't good.
Yeah, that's what the reason I asked it up top is because I was like, is there a chance maybe that people were harsh on this? Overly harsh?
Not overly. Properly harsh.
Yeah, but I think it got what it deserved.
Yeah.
We gave it a fighting chance, and it failed.
Yeah. I'm going to say it. I rank Saint Anger higher than this one. I will take that fucking garbage can snare.
You know what? Do I, though?
I don't know. I had a harder time listening to Saint Anger than I did this album.
Yeah, but at least it was interesting. You know, there was like a lot of times where I was listening going like, what the fuck's going on? Why would you do that?
Why would you do that? Why would you make this fucking album with all those sounds? It was interesting because my brain was trying to tear apart the garbage of sound mush together and be like, no, that's this. No, that's this. No, but why does he keep hitting it if it sounds out of tune? Why would he stop in tune?
That's what I mean. None of my notes for Saint Anger were, I'm so bored.
True. True.
So that's where I'm coming from anyway.
That's fair.
All right. Well, that's been Bargain Bin. Thank you, everybody, for hanging out and joining in. Do we have any other comments from the Peanut Gallery that anybody wants to... If you got anything to say, type it in now, and we'll get to it. But, of course, patreon.com/learningtolisten. That's where you get all the hot content that we don't put out on the podcast. That's only for you Patreons, you very, very special people that help us keep this pirate ship afloat. we put shit out early. Yeah, exactly. We put out content early. We put all the bonus stuff out. You get basically a raw dogging experience. And since COVID, who's been raw dogging, right? So
I broke my vibrator. Sorry. I'm just kidding.
Wow. Charlie, get that drop.
Noted.
Yeah. So anyway, normally we save that stuff for Patreon, but Naomi gave you a little extra.
I just wanted you to have a little sample. Yeah.
Sample today. Yeah. So patreon.com/learningtolisten. And of course, social media is where you can follow us, reach out, tell us if there's albums that you think we should do that we haven't listened to yet. Give us some suggestions. Fuck, maybe you want to come on as a guest and tell us about your favorite record when you were a kid that made you always want to play the drums. Tell us about that record.
Maybe you want to come on and defend this album. Let's do some defense episodes.
Yeah, in defense of. Yeah,
I would love that.
Bring it.
Of course, you better have a thick skin. All right. Anyway, where can everybody follow us, Charlie?
Just go to l2lpodcast.com and it's all right there. It's all right there. What more do you need? It's all right there.
And yeah, also learningtolistenpodcast@gmail.com. You can do it the old-fashioned way. Not the old-fashioned way. That would be snail mail, yeah. But the new old-fashioned way. Does that
I wonder what happens if you put an email address on a stamped envelope. Mail to learningtolistenpodcast@gmail.com and then slip it right in the old mailbox.
I'm sure that's been done.
That's coming back to you. That's return to sender.
Did I try new batteries?
Okay. And Naomi, hey, what was that phone number that people could call?
Oh, fuck. I'm never prepared for this part.
Oh, come on.
All right. What does the Peanut Gallery have to say while Naomi's looking for the phone?
Well, they're asking if she's tried new batteries.
You should see the amount of batteries I buy. Oh, my goodness. Hold on. Let's
run through some of the comments. Criminal Minds is Joe Montagna. Ice-T is on SVU. Do Better Thick Stuff is from Cold Shower. Cold Shower also says, pretty sure Michael Scott picked up that album and loved it. And then Cold Shower also says, the phone number to call is 780-425-5050.
Oh, that's Lido, free delivery.
Oh, that's not the right phone number.
It's a...
Somebody called. By the way, has anybody called that number recently to see if it connects to anything?
It's a 426-5050. Jeez. Okay.
Oh, this is right.
Our phone number is 780-851-8785. You can leave us a voicemail, express your opinions, call us names, be on the show, whatever you like.
Yeah.
You can't send dick pics on the phone though, so that's good.
But you can you can send dick sounds.
Yes, you can. 780 780-851-8785.
All right. Okay. And then personal plugs. Charlie, what do you got going on?
Personal plugs. Hey, man, you want to get yourself some hot Learning to Listen merch? Just go to oldmandesign.com. Look, friends, I sort of slightly lied to you in the past. And you know what? I apologize. I previously said that the L2L for Life podcast was up and ready to get bought, or the t-shirt was up and ready to get bought, but it wasn't. But I fixed it. So now if you go to oldmandesign.com, you can get the L2L for Life t-shirt. I keep wanting to say podcast, but get the t-shirt. It helps out. It helps us out. Get the mug, get the other t-shirts, get a whole bunch of t-shirts and like cut them up and put them on jean jackets. That's pretty cool. Maybe you can make a pillow out of them. Just go on to goodoldmandesign.com and get some new shit.
Jesus, somebody could start a whole Etsy from your t-shirt design. Great. Okay.
I want to tell you during this thing, I've had a couple of drinks of some of New Orleans' finest
Southern Comfort,
SoCo, SoCo Black. Yeah. So you know, I'm usually a little bit more on my promo game. So
yeah, where were your drops today?
Cheers, my apologies. I've been just dropping ice in the glass, you know. Oh, you want one?
Wow.
All right. Well, after a performance like that, Naomi, what do you got going on?
Oh, we have another podcast in our family called Dope Nostalgia. And my guest coming up for this week is Biff Naked.
Hey, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
Princess Biff Naked.
She's super, super cool.
She had that song in the day that was like about spacemen.
I love spacemen.
And then she had that song that was about a moment of weakness. I think that was my favorite.
And her tango shoes.
What was the one that went like, dun, 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 like,
wasn't that Green
Day? That's a Green Day song.
Yeah, but she came out with it and she was like, I didn't know Green Day was going to release this exact same sounding fucking song when I dropped this one.
I don't know. Let's do an episode about that.
But it was also kind of the Cat Came Back, because it went like, dun, dun, you know, Cat Came Back, very next day. Dun, 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 dun.
I just don't know if you're confused.
I know about music. See, I'm just trying to prove my legitimacy to talk shit about albums like Robin Thicke's Paula. All right. That's it. That's everything. That's the whole podcast. We did it. Good job, everybody. Congratulations. See you next fucking time.
Bye.
Woo.
Oh boy.
The 1990s. The music was fun.
Yeah.
And then it got really dark for a while, a little bit anti-establishment.
But the next thing you knew, it was totally fun again.
So many artists came and went and left us wondering, what are they doing now? This podcast isn't about the heavy hitters who are still making millions. It's about everyone else. The ones whose careers didn't really leave that decade and kind of just still live in our memory.
So you mean Vanilla Ice had another song?
We all know what happened to Marky Mark. But what about the Funky Bunch? Who were the KLF? And why did Tammy Wynette record a song with an electro dance band that topped the charts? Two genres that specifically defined the 90s. What were freestyle and New Jack Swing all about? Did you know that Blossom star Joey Lawrence had a huge pop hit? Or that Alanis Morissette had a really hot pop career in Canada before Jagged Little Pill? Special guests will also be joining me to discuss the great era of glitter, grunge, thin eyebrows, hammer pants, and total ridiculousness. We're even setting up some interviews with some of the musicians that define the times.
Okay, so if you're older than 30, you might be sitting here going, man, I totally remember that song, but I have no idea who does that. Well, then you better listen and find out.
I'm Naomi Carmack, host of the ultimate 90s podcast, Dope Nostalgia. You're going to be busting the move again, coming in early 2020. You want to follow us so that you know when we go live? Check out our Twitter at NostalgiaDope. Or you can find us on Instagram at dope_nostalgia. If you've got a question or you just want to be on the show, email us at dopenostalgiapodcast@gmail.com.